Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're going to be talking about aquatic invasives to start the program today. These species have a huge effect on our waterways, and there are some things you and I can do to help prevent their spread. We'll talk about that. I'm Larry Mueller, of course, and our guest Jake Walsh, freshwater ecologist working as a researcher at the University of Wisconsin-Madison Center for Limnology. And Jake, thanks for taking time to be with us today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
Tim Campbell with me as well. Tim is the Aquatic Invasive Species Outreach Specialist with the UW Sea Grant Program. And Tim, great to have you along.
Yeah, excited to be here, Larry.
And I tell you what, you can join in too. Give a call. What's your experience with aquatic invasives? 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. Tim, maybe you can start out by talking about the Sea Grant Program. What's it all about?
So the Sea Grant Program promotes the responsible and sustainable use of our Great Lakes and coastal resources through education, research, and outreach. And I'm very much on the education and outreach end of things, working with coastal communities and other stakeholders across Wisconsin to implement the latest science that happens here at the University of Wisconsin and just really try to expand that out into our coastal communities and make it work for them.
Well, I know it's a great program. It's been going on for a long time. Jake, what about the another program that's been going on, or a center that's been going on for a long time, the Center for Limnology? What goes on there?
Yeah, so limnology is the study of inland waters, so lakes, rivers, wetlands, groundwater. And we've been doing work on Wisconsin's and the world's lakes, rivers, and wetlands for almost 100 years now. So a lot of that ranges from the chemistry that goes on in the lakes, to the physics, to the biology. And there's been a pretty wide array of stuff going on there. As long as it has to do with water, we do a lot of work there.
Well, unfortunately, we've got something to deal with called the spiny water flea. What is it?
So the spiny water flea is a tiny organism. It's about the width of your pinky altogether, and it's a zooplankton, so just a tiny crustacean that lives in lakes, and it's a predator, so it eats other zooplankton.
And where is it found in Wisconsin, and how did it get here?
So we have it in a dozen or so lakes. It's been detected in each of the Madison lakes, and then in a few lakes in northern Wisconsin as well, in the northern Highland Lakes District. And so we got spiny water flea most directly through recreational boating from the Great Lakes, but it originally got into the Great Lakes through transatlantic shipping vessels that trade, that pick up cargo for trade from Europe and Asia, and then bring that water to the Great Lakes and the St. Lawrence Seaway, where a lot of organisms and invasive species are released. So that's how spiny water flea got to the Great Lakes initially. And then, again, the big thing that got it to Madison and to Wisconsin is recreational boating, where
yeah.
It's taken up in water and anchor lines and stuff like that.
And Tim, it says it's a little, but it's a miserable little thing, isn't it?
Indeed. It's a nuisance if you're a fisherman out on the Great Lakes, and I've also heard of people having issues with it in Trout Lake. If they're trolling, it gloms up on your fishing line, clog the eyelets, and can cause people to lose fish. And then if you're on Lake Mendota, which I know Jake knows a lot more about, it has big impacts to our water clarity. So if you enjoy clear water, you do not enjoy the spiny water flea.
Well, we're certainly trying to do some things to get rid of the spiny water flea, and maybe talk a little bit about what's being done to get rid of it.
So as part of our normal suite of aquatic invasive species prevention programs in Wisconsin, our number one thing we do is support a large network of watercraft inspectors through the Clean Boats, Clean Waters program, which is run out of University of Wisconsin Extension Lakes program in Stevens Point. And there's a standard training that all our volunteer and paid watercraft inspectors go through, and they learn to have conversations with boaters to really help educate them about the impacts of aquatic invasive species and then train them on what they can be doing to help prevent the spread. And so we know through surveys that many of our boaters, over 90% of them, are aware of aquatic invasive species laws and what they should be doing to preventing their spread. So a lot of times they're just there as a friendly reminder to take action and then hopefully educate the boaters that don't know what's going on.
Yeah, and Jake, you've done really extensive research on how the spiny water flea has affected Lake Mendota in Madison. Talk about your findings there. What's the economic impact of this change in the lake?
Absolutely. So the sort of the ecological foundation for that is that spiny water flea is just a voracious eater. And it eats tiny organisms known as daphnia that actually are responsible for keeping the lake clear of algae. So daphnia eat a lot of algae, keeping the lake clear. And if spiny water flea are eating daphnia, then we have a murkier lake as a result. And so a lot of our work has been on what does that mean for Madison and what does that mean for Dane County. And so one of the things we did is updated a study that looked at the value of 1 meter or 3 feet or so of water clarity in Lake Mendota, which is roughly what we lost with the spiny water flea invasion. The lake got 3 feet less clear. And so when we update that number, we see that Dane County as a whole values 3 feet of water clarity in Lake Mendota on the order of $100 million. And so just trying to get at the economic value in Dane County reveals a lot about what we think about water clarity. So it's not just a fishing problem. It's this problem that affects everything we do in the lake. And then the second part of the study was that we wanted to look at how could we get that water clarity back. So another thing that's affecting water clarity in Lake Mendota is agricultural runoff that goes into the streams that flow into Lake Mendota, and that fertilizes algae growth just like it fertilizes crop growth. And so we would have to reduce that agricultural runoff by 70% to offset spiny water flea's impact. And that project would cost somewhere between $80 and $160 million. So one species in one lake is having a really, really big effect, and it's on something that's pretty key to how Dane County interacts with its water.
And we have callers online already. You can join in, too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Love to hear from you. Before we get to Bob in Land O'Lakes, Tim... How do we stop the spread? You've created one thing, I think a kind of a funny video, which we have posted up on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and I hope everybody goes to see it. My voice is in there, although I'm supposed to sound more like Walter Winchell or something. So
I think you sound very patriotic and inspiring in the video, and I'm sure the John Philip Sousa in the background really helps with that.
But that's you're trying to spread the word in a lot of different ways.
Right, and with our Clean Boats, Clean Waters program, everyone knows to promote the Stop Aquatic Hitchhikers campaign and brand and Spectre Move, Drain Never Move, Live Fish. Those are the things that every boater should know that they should do. It's required by law here in Wisconsin. And we know a lot of people have gotten that message, but no matter how effective you are with your outreach and education efforts, there's always somebody that's not listening, or there's these people that have just never even thought of your issue or didn't even know they should care. So this video that Brett Shaw and I put together that you helped out with is just one way to try to reach some of those people that haven't been listening and try to communicate our message in a slightly different way. So if the Stop Aquatic Hitchhikers campaign and Inspector Move Drain Never Move doesn't stick with you, hopefully this video will.
and again, we have it posted on our Facebook page, and I hope you'll go and click onto it because it's really well done. It's kind of like, it starts like the Patton movie, George C. Scott standing, and if you saw that film, you will immediately recognize that.
And we paid a lot of attention to detail, especially in that opening film sequence. You'll notice the spiny water flea invasion task force patch, which have been a really good prop to have, you know, after we've had the film. I have that sitting in my office. I hope to sew it onto a jacket here soon.
There we go. Bob in Land O'Lakes, let's turn to you. Thanks for calling, Bob.
Hi. You know, the economic impacts are huge. And, you know, you can basically divide the state lakes into those that are infected by aquatic invasives, especially the most important ones, and those that aren't. And I don't understand. I mean, I live in Vilas County, and, you know, the roads are traveled, you know, by recreational boaters and fishermen who hit two or more lakes in a day. The idea of trying to control this by voluntary methods is almost, you know, I mean, if you're looking at the spread, there's very little chance that you're going to control it through voluntary. I don't understand why we don't license boats for operating on infected waters versus non-infected waters. If you have a boat that you use on an infected water, you should not be able to move that boat. It should not be licensed to a non-infected water. I don't understand why that isn't considered as an option. We have all kinds of regulations for boating, having to have flotation devices, and you have to have fishing licenses and all these types of things. Why can't we license boats to operate on infected versus non-infected water?
Well, thanks for that question. Jake, do you want to take a shot at it?
So I think that's actually a great question for Tim. I think I could speculate, but I think Tim...
All right, well, let's turn to Tim then.
Yeah, that's a really great question, Bob, and I know it's something that has been talked about across aquatic invasive species managers within the DNR and the counties, and the issues with implementing something like that would be really difficult. That's not a great reason not to have that program, but we do know that the required steps by law to prevent the spread of aquatic invasive species, inspect, remove, drain, never move, are really effective at stopping the spread of invasive species. And it's hard to get everyone on board with that, but we can get most people on board with that. If we look out west, we can see examples of states and even lakes that have implemented programs like this. Lake Tahoe, for example, has a program. I used to remember the name of it, but essentially you can get a Lake Tahoe boat registration and you can get a license for all of California. And so if you only have the Lake Tahoe, they're an uninvaded lake, at least in terms of zebra mussels and spiny water fleas and the things most people care about. You could just go right into that lake. You don't need to get decontaminated or have the same watercraft inspection program. But if you have just the general boating license, you have to go through all these extra steps in order to get access to Lake Tahoe. The difference to how they do it in Lake Tahoe and a lot of the different the states out west are they are looking at one lake or 200 lakes per state, and we have 15,000 lakes in Wisconsin. And so just the logistics in running something like that is something that would take a lot of time and effort. And if it's something that the people of Wisconsin would really want, it would be great to hear more of that, and we could look at how we can change our Clean Boats, Clean Waters program to help address some of those issues.
Yeah, it's a really, with 15,000 lakes, it's so, so hard. And something like the spiny water flea, how many lakes is it in right now?
Jake might know the exact answer, but I think it's between 10 and 15. It's a very low number relative to some of our other invasive species.
10 and 15, but if you license somebody for those 10 to 15 lakes and then five more lakes pop up,
then it changes the licensing structure. And the thing, but this works out west because they're only concerned with zebra mussels and quagga. I mean, they're concerned with other invasive species, but their main talking points are zebra mussels and quagga mussels, and that's what they're trying to keep out of their lakes. We have a lot of different invasive species that we're concerned with that we're trying to prevent the spread everywhere. So we'd really have to look at, what's an invaded lake? Because a lot of lakes have one invasive species, but it might be something inconsequential, like a Chinese mystery snail that, we know is non-native, but we can't really nail down the impacts of.
Talking today with Jake Walsh, a freshwater ecologist working as a researcher at the University of Wisconsin-Madison Center for Limnology, and Tim Campbell, aquatic invasive species outreach specialist with UWC grant program. I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments. Number to call 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. Or again, post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And please do go to The Larry Mueller Show Facebook page and click on the video on the spiny water flea. You'll learn an awful lot about it and how to control it in a kind of a fun way, I think. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our producer. Malik Anderson, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The spiny water flea is just one of the aquatic invasives that are threatening our waterways, and we're talking about what you and I can do to stop the spread of these invaders with our guests, Jake Walsh and Tim Campbell. A question, comment, experience to share? I hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Just a reminder, at 11:45 today, we'll be talking about raptor rehabilitation and the dangers of fireworks on our bird population. So all that coming up at 11:45. But right now we're zeroing in on the spiny water flea and some other aquatic invasives. And Don in Warren, Illinois, wants to join us, so let's go there. Don, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. My old retired buddy, we talk every week on the phone. He's a retired limnologist, Michigan State, Dr. Kevin. He tells me that these quagga mussels in Michigan have the potential of clearing the water up in Michigan so it looks like Lake Superior. It's bare desert, and they will go very deep where the zebras wouldn't go in cold water, but these will. And they have no idea where this is going to come out or how to stop it, and they're multiplying like crazy.
Yeah. Jake, is that something you're familiar with?
Yeah, a little bit. I've heard a little bit of how quagga mussels are, you know, switching in lakes or swapping for zebra mussels. And yeah, they're filter feeders. They can clear water really quickly. They can take nutrients out of sort of the open water and move it to the bottom of a lake, so then big mats of algae grow and break off and rot on shore, and they can be pretty problematic for sure.
Yeah. Well, the spiny water flea, it's kind of, you know, you'd think, okay, well, why don't the fish just eat them? But that doesn't work, does it?
No, so some fish do, but so spiny water flea do have that long tail spine where they get their name. It's the majority of their length, actually, that makes it hard for small fish to handle them. And because of that, we think it could be a challenge to control spiny water flea using fish. But I did mention that there are some fish that do. We see a lot of fish in Mendota eating spiny water flea, not enough to actually control the population yet. But we think that's an obvious next step in thinking about controlling spiny water flea, and using fish that are better at handling the tail spine could be really effective there. So in particular, bluegill and pumpkin seed can actually maneuver spiny water flea. And this is master's work that was done at Michigan Tech. They can actually maneuver spiny water flea so that they snip off their tail spine before they eat them. So it like decreases the handling time of spiny water flea by half. And so they can eat, you know, in theory, twice as many spiny water flea or something like that. And we have a huge population of bluegill in Lake Monona, which is just south of Madison on the isthmus. And we don't see as many spiny water flea in Lake Monona. So what we want to look into next is that coincidence, or is there something going on there biologically that we can use to maybe control spiny water flea in Lake Mendota? So, yeah, the tail spine's a big issue.
I've caught a lot of bluegill out of Lake Monona, and you're certainly right about the numbers of bluegill in that lake. There are tons of them in there, which are a lot of fun to catch and eat, too, for that matter.
Oh, they're great, and they get big, from what I hear. Yeah.
I had a living on the lake, had a pier right over a bedding area, and so I take my little daughter out there, and we'd about 5 seconds per dropping the line in the water to catch one, and then we'd put them all in a pail, and then wind up throwing a lot of them right straight back in the lake because she didn't want us to take them and clean them and eat them. Oh, man. Brian and Madison, it's your turn. Brian, thanks a lot for calling. What's on your mind?
Hey, Larry. Thanks for taking my question. So I do a lot of kayak fishing. I guess I just kind of started doing it this year, and I do fish the Madison chain quite a bit. I'm wondering, you know, what can I do from the kayak standpoint, or what should I do to stop potential spread of, you know, the spiny water flea or other invasive species just from a kayak that doesn't necessarily have water, you know, transporting back and forth.
But yeah, kayak or canoe, for that matter. Yeah. I tell you what, you're better than me when it comes to fishing out of a kayak. I'm pretty sure of that. What about that?
So our hand-launched watercraft are actually, like all watercraft, pretty easy to prevent the spread of aquatic invasive species with. And there's no real special concerns with the kayak or canoe. Just be sure to inspect, remove, drain, never move, pick all the plants off, drain any water. Sometimes water splashes over to the top. Or if you have compartments on your kayak, be sure to drain those. And those are the things that you would be required to do by law. But if you want to take some extra steps, you can always wipe off your equipment with a towel. That helps knock things off that are hard to see, like the spiny water fleas, zebra mussel veligers, or small snails. And then you can also treat your equipment, if you'd really like to, with a light bleach solution. I think it's 2.5 tablespoons per gallon of water. And then you could even go a step further and spray it off with either a high-pressure washer, because that'll help knock things off that you can't see, and then high-pressure hot water kills and knocks things off. So there's a whole suite of things you can do to, you know, be 100% sure you're not moving invasive species with a canoe or a kayak. But doing what's required by law, picking all the plants off and draining the water to the best of your ability, is a really effective step.
All right. There we go. Thanks a lot, Brian.
Yeah.
Yeah, appreciate the call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. Speaking of email, Marilyn emailed to ask how runoff from lawn fertilizer affects waterways, and why isn't that regulated?
It's a good question. It might be tough for me to touch on that. But I can tie that into some of Jake's work in saying that the lawn fertilizer that would run into the Madison chain of lakes, that would be another one of those factors that's adding nutrients to the lake and promoting algae growth, which is something that, you know, would be compounded by the fact that spiny water flea is in those waters, making the water less clear and mm-hmm. less valuable to folks. So,
and Jake, you've done some research on that or looked at it?
Yeah. So that is one of the sources of phosphorus. When it comes to Lake Mendota, the vast majority of phosphorus comes from agricultural sources, but that doesn't mean that we can't be controlling what we put on our lawns and what gets from our lawns into the lakes, because that is still a significant amount of phosphorus and nutrients that's going to be fertilizing algae growth, and that problem is worsened by spiny water flea. But the big source is agriculture, and the big source of phosphorus in the other lakes in the chain in Madison is Lake Mendota itself. So controlling that is the big one, but there's still a lot of phosphorus that comes off of our landscapes and our lawns and our roads, particularly for Lake Monona, that we can actually play a part in. Like, that's our property. We can play a role in keeping the lakes clear, definitely.
Steve emailed to ask why ocean-going ships that use the Great Lakes don't exchange ballast water before using the St. Lawrence Seaway. Another perhaps tough question. I don't know.
Tim? So that's something I think I can answer. This is one place where I feel like I failed a little bit as an outreach specialist. I spend so much time talking stop aquatic hitchhikers and inland lakes. I don't talk enough about ballast water and all the progress we've made there. We haven't actually seen a new ballast water invader in the Great Lakes since 2006. The last one was the bloody red shrimp. But to the best of my knowledge, ships are required to perform ballast water exchange out the ocean, open ocean, and meet a certain salinity level. And if you're unfamiliar with ballast water exchange, what they're doing is a lot of times they're bringing in ballast in brackish or even freshwater ports that have species that could survive here in the Great Lakes. So when they're exchanging ballast water out in the open ocean, they're doing two things. They're expelling all those organisms that could be in their ballast tanks in the open ocean, but then if there are things that are hanging out that could survive, they're oftentimes killed with that salinity shock. So we found that it's been a very effective way of protecting the Great Lakes from ballast water invasions. And to my knowledge, every ship is doing that, and they're inspected before entering the St. Lawrence Seaway to make sure that either the ballast water exchange has been noted in their logs, or if I dug into this a little bit more, I'm pretty sure they have to meet a salinity requirement before entering to, you know, show that they've actually done it.
Well, that's a very, very good thing then. Lynn posted on Facebook to say that she volunteers for Clean Boats, Clean Waters, and she's pretty surprised by the number of fishermen who seem totally unaware of aquatic invasives and refuse to let her clean off their boats.
Well, unfortunately, we can't reach everyone. We did reach, I think, 230,000 boaters with our Clean Boats, Clean Waters program last year, but we don't have watercraft inspectors everywhere, so we're obviously not meeting everyone. And it's disappointing to hear that there's not only people that just haven't gotten our message, which we can continue to spread our message, like with the spiny water flea video or other educational campaigns, but it's the attitude that they just refuse to clean off their boats because it's inevitable, or they can't make a difference, which is totally untrue. Every boater can make a difference, whether it's just taking the steps themselves or talking to their fellow boaters about the importance of taking steps. And I think Jake could probably touch on how it's not inevitable that all these invasions are actually occurring because of recreational boaters and humans and not, you know, the birds moving things around.
Yeah, a lot of our research is that that is the primary vector. We don't see a lot of invasive species in more remote, like, lakes that are cut off from humans. We don't see a lot of invasive species there. I think in a survey of a good number of lakes that our lab did a couple of years ago, we didn't see any in those kinds of lakes. And so we have a lot of control over what's moving where because a lot of things are transported by boats and by us. So it's worth it to be really investing time into cleaning boats and draining and drying to make sure we're never moving invasive species. Absolutely. Yeah.
John in Green Bay, just to go along with that, he called to ask if waterfowl, ducks, for example, or geese, spread spiny water fleas, or can they?
I mean, I could imagine a scenario where they could, but I do not think that's a huge vector for transporting spiny water flea places.
Are they pretty easily, I mean, if you've got a spiny water flea, are they pretty easily killed other than smashing them in your finger, which you probably wouldn't want to do?
That's a great question, actually. The adults are pretty easy to kill. They die from a lot of the same things that other invasive species do. Like bleach will kill an adult spiny water flea. The really challenging problem with spiny water flea is they produce these resting eggs that are made to survive just about anything. They survive bleaching, for example. And those are the really big challenge. And one of the only things that really kills them is drying them out for more than 6 hours at a time. And making sure that happens in every compartment on a boat is really challenging. So drying them and heating them up, that's the challenge with spiny water flea, is they have these eggs that just survive just about whatever you want to do to them.
So what are the stages of the spiny water flea? They start as an egg?
Yeah. So early in the year, they'll emerge from these eggs in the bottom of lakes, and then they'll grow into a population, and then they actually reproduce asexually, just sort of producing clones of themselves in the water column, until later in the summer or fall, where they actually start producing males to create these eggs again so that they can start the whole cycle over the next year. And those eggs are, you know, they're made to survive winter, but they actually survive quite a bit that we try to do to them, too.
Oh, man. So I'm envisioning a pretty rapid spread once they get into a lake.
Yeah, that's a good point. They reproduce really quickly. So if they're able to take hold and create a population that can sustain itself, they reproduce really, really quickly when they're cloning themselves in the water column. I'm
absolutely amazing. Jake Walsh, Tim Campbell, our guest today. Jake with the UW-Madison Center for Limnology, Tim Campbell, Outreach Specialist with the UWC Grant Program, as we talk about these spiny water fleas. And we can talk about, and we have been talking about, some other invasives as well, aquatic invasives in Wisconsin. Who knows how many we even have in the state?
Well, how many we have in the state, I'm not sure I can do that number. I can tell you that in the Great Lakes, there's, I think, 184 non-native species in the Great Lakes. And kind of the tricky part of that is, you know, what we're defining as an invasive species. While there's 186 non-native species, that includes things like Chinook salmon and coho salmon, which I just enjoyed fishing for last month. So, you know, if they provide us with a service and an economic benefit, even if they're non-native, we're totally cool with having them in our Great Lakes. But if we start talking like things about like zebra mussels and quagga mussels, which maybe touch on what a previous caller mentioned with quagga mussels being everywhere. I've heard that you could walk across the bottom of Lake Michigan on quagga mussels, and that it takes about a week for the quagga mussels to filter the volume of water in Lake Michigan. So there's a lot of them in there.
Filter all of the water?
Yep. I think I've heard 7 trillion quagga mussels in Lake Michigan.
Oh, my goodness.
But luckily, we've kept those out of inland lakes here in Wisconsin. While they're in inland lakes in the western United States, we've kept them out of inland lakes in Wisconsin. And I think about my day-to-day job, and, yeah, I'm concerned with zebra mussels and quagga mussels in Wisconsin. We do a little work with New Zealand mud snails, faucet snails, water lettuce, water hyacinth, which are two newly prohibited NR40 species, which means they're illegal to buy, sell, trade, possess, those kind of things. And hopefully we'll be talking a little bit more about the spiny water flea here in the future, just because part of the reason we made the spiny water flea video was because spiny water fleas are a very key part in their kind of invasion history here in Wisconsin. They're in such a few number of lakes right now that we really have the potential to limit them to the number of lakes they're in. So if we act now, we can keep them to the handful of lakes they're in.
I should have you describe the entire video for people, because I really want people to take a look at it. But tell about it.
So as you know, an outreach specialist, there's a kind of video that we really tend to make most of the time. It just envision your normal science video where you have important scientists talking to you about their projects and how important it is to do things. And that's effective, especially for an audience that's willing to listen to you. And, you know, kind of captive. And we've had a lot of success raising awareness with those types of videos. But we know that there's some people out there that just aren't thinking about our subject, don't really want to watch the video of me talking about how important spiny water fleas are. But there are, you know, ways that with, you know, the internet and social media and how easy it is for, you know, pretty much anyone to make a video now, you know, people are getting really creative with how they're putting their messages together. And with limited marketing budgets, you know, we thought that we could integrate the social sciences, natural sciences, and the arts to create a video that, you know, gets the message across that we want, inspires behavior change, but is fun and enjoyable to watch, and hopefully that people share and talk about, because it's such an interesting and fun approach.
Yeah, and so you've got this fellow that's kind of dressed up like George C. Scott as Patton, but he's got these spines over him.
We've got the spiny water flea general and his majestic spiky tail. A lot of different cultural references in there that hopefully people can pick up on. Maybe you enjoy the Patton scene in the beginning or the Zoolander scene towards the middle of the video.
And then there's a lot of really good information. One of the parts of the that I remembered, but you know, there, I'm not sure that every time I've pulled my anchor up, I've really cleaned it off as well as I probably should have. And anchors are one of those spots that a guy might not think of.
Right. It's not something that's always been a part of our standard invasive species messaging. People know to pick the weeds off their trailer and drain all the water, but you know, the anchor was something I always just cleaned off because I didn't want to bring a muddy anchor into the boat.
Yeah.
But it's something that we need to do a better job of including in our Clean Boats, Clean Waters messaging. That's something that you should really think about cleaning off, because you could be moving spiny water flea resting eggs or small snails or, you know, even, you know, corbicula, Asian clams, or other things too.
And Brett Shaw was telling me that it's been fairly well received, especially among guys.
Yes. We like to talk about our target audiences when we're trying to market our invasive species messaging. And we know from license sales and boat registrations that a lot of boaters and anglers are men. So we really made this first video as kind of a pilot project to target that audience to see how well they would receive it. But hopefully in the future that this has been well received, and as we start to do some evaluation efforts of the video, we can start branching at maybe looking at different invasive species topics or other environmental topics that we can communicate in this kind of fun, interesting way.
And, you know, Brett Shaw, by the way, Brett is a colleague of mine in the Department of Life Sciences Communication, so I see Brett a lot. And his daughter, Ella, who is sixth grader, wrote a great song that comes in right at the end, but also includes, you know, sort of like she was listening to her dad do all this work on spiny water fleas, so she wrote her own song for him. And it's wonderful.
I get it stuck in my head as I ride my bike into the office. It's a really great song.
Oh, my goodness. Jake, you've heard it many times, I'm sure, too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I've got it up. So let's listen to this. Now, this is a sixth grader, Ella Shaw, who wrote this song and sang it herself. And we'll listen to a little bit of it anyway, and it talks about the spiny water flea and what we can do about it.
Please don't spread the spiny water fleas. We can do it now. Here's how. Clean equipment, lines and reels. Go to all the people, see how they feel now. Oh, wow. Up the plankton, oh, all their mistakes are taking up the fish we supply. Oh, wow. So clean your bilge, live well, and motors. This is good advice to all you boaters. Try this time. Cause if you don't.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah, so if you'd like to listen to it again, you can go to stopthespiny.com, and it's at the end of the video, so you have to make it all the way through the video, and then we hope to have it available as an MP3 on the website here soon, too.
Yeah, we posted it up on our Facebook page, too, so the individual song is up there, too. So a last message. Here we are, out of time. Last message for Tim for boaters out there.
I think that preventing the spread of the spiny water flea in really any aquatic invasive species, it's something that anyone can do. It's definitely worth your time, and we all have the ability to do that. So be sure to follow the Stop Aquatic Hitchhikers guidance, inspect, remove, drain, never move, pick all the vegetation off your boat, drain the water. And in addition to that, tell all your friends to do it too. I get paid to tell people this, but you know, hearing it from your peers is one of the most important things.
Well, it's been a real pleasure, Tim and Jake, to have you with us, and I hope this video is a huge success, and I hope all of your other efforts are successful as well. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Great. Thank you, Larry.
Yeah. Thank you so much. And Jake Walsh, freshwater ecologist working as a researcher at the UW-Madison Center for Limnology. Tim Campbell, aquatic invasive species outreach specialist with the UWC grant program. Well, we want to get rid of the spiny water flea, but there are a lot of other animals, especially birds, and we want to try and save. And there's a group of people out there led by Marge Gibson who have done a tremendous amount in raptor rehabilitation and education. And we'll talk with Marge Gibson next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.